Okay, I'm going to speak on the perfect wine for
you. Okay, hold it. Now tell me when you're ready.
Sorry.
Let it go.
I'm going to speak on the perfect wife this evening. And it's based on a passage in Proverbs at the end of the book of Proverbs, chapter 31, verses 10 to 31. And so, first of all, we'll start off by reading that through. And in the NIV, it's headed up, Epilogue, the wife of noble character, or as I call it, the perfect wife. Starting at verse 10. A wife of noble character, who can find? She's worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. She selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She's like the merchant ships bringing her food from afar. She gets up while it's still dark. She provides food for her family and portions for her servant girls. She considers a field and buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees that her trading is profitable and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand, she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She is clothed in fine linen and purple. Her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes his seat among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies the merchants with sashes. She is clothed with strength and dignity, and she can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children arise and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive, and beauty is fleeting. But a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the reward she has earned, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. This passage has always been a favourite of Mike's. I think very shortly after we first met, when I was still about 16 or 17, he pointed this passage out to me. The last thing I was thinking about then was being the perfect wife. But obviously that all changed after that. Before I start looking at the passage, though, I want to start by telling you a story that I found about a man who was looking for the perfect wife. And it goes like this. I met a man who said he was looking for the perfect wife. And he told me that he needed to find someone who was beautiful, kind and loving, and very spiritual. And yes, he had found such a woman, but it didn't work out. He said she was so spiritual that she couldn't easily relate to the practical things in the world. And then he found someone that was really perfect. She was beautiful, kind and loving, but she was also intelligent, organized and very practical and down to earth. She was just what he was looking for. But he said that didn't work out either. Well, why was that? It's because she was so practical that she really didn't need him very much, and she ended up nagging him and always telling him what to do. And so he carried on looking for the perfect woman. And then he finally did find the perfect wife, and she was beautiful, kind and loving. She was also intelligent, organized and practical and down to earth. And she was also very spiritual. So she was a perfect balance and no one could be better. She would make just what he was looking for, the perfect wife. So I asked him if they got married. And again, he said no. Well, why not? Well, because unfortunately, she was looking for a perfect husband. So I think there has to be a moral to that tale somewhere. Getting back to the passage in Proverbs 31, which is what we're looking at. To start with, it's an acrostic poem. There's 22 verses there, and the first verse begins with the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet, and so on through the next 21 verses, each remaining verse beginning with the remaining 21 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. And as I said, the poem's obviously right at the end of the Book of Proverbs, and it forms an appendix to the Book of Proverbs. And most commentators feel that it's very unlikely to have been written by Solomon, even though the vast majority of the rest of the book was actually written by him. So, as we know, the previous 30 chapters are full of hundreds of sayings, full of sayings all about human nature, the wisdom, his wisdom about human nature. And sadly, although he was given the gift of wisdom by God when he was very young, he didn't actually carry on using it through his life, especially in his later life. And we know that he had eventually had 700 wives and 300 concubines, and they turned his heart after other gods. And in Ecclesiastes, which Solomon also wrote, it says in chapter 7, verse 28, "While I was still searching but not finding, I found one upright man among a thousand, but not one upright woman among them all." So it seems out of his thousand wives and concubines that he didn't actually find one good woman. And why was that? I think the answer lies at the end of the passage that we've just read, Proverbs 31, verse 30, where it actually says, "Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised." And it seems very likely that Solomon chose all the wrong women. 1 Kings 11 tells us that he loved many women, and they were all from foreign countries that the Lord had told him not to intermarry with, as they would turn his heart after their own gods. And in the end, of course, they did. So he looked for the wrong women. And so Solomon never actually found the wife of noble character, the perfect wife, which is a bit sad, really, as he had a thousand. And women were his downfall. So I think it's ironic that this passage is on the perfect wife is actually included as an appendix to a book that's mostly written by a man who never actually found a single one, even though he had a thousand. If we summarise what Proverbs 31 says about the perfect wife, it tells us that she works hard, she's not lazy, she's dignified and wise, her husband and her children bless her and praise her, and her husband has full confidence in her, and she brings him good as long as he lives. And most importantly, she fears the Lord. And I think if we bear in mind that that was written nearly 1000 BC, that is 3000 years ago, it's amazing because apart from the specific details of what her work is, it's actually very modern when you read it through. It's talking about a working wife, one who's busy going out to work each day, helping her husband to make a living for the family so that they have enough to eat and a warm house when it snowed. And also so they had security for the future so that she could laugh at the days to come, as it says, and make enough extra so that they could help the poor and the needy. And so not only does the wife of noble character fear the Lord, she's also very practical. And it's also very clear from the passage that she helps her husband in everything. And in doing that, she fulfills the purpose for a wife that's laid right down at the beginning in Genesis 2, verse 18. And there it tells us, "The Lord God said, it's not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him." And so Eve is created. And we all know the story very well. She doesn't quite turn out to be the help that she was supposed to be. But in Proverbs 31, we actually do have a description of what a suitable helper should be like. And most Jewish women were brought up with that role model of the perfect woman. And as this passage was traditionally recited in the Jewish home every week just before the Sabbath, so they kept it uppermost in their minds how they should behave and what they should be like. And it says, if we come up to that standard, it tells us she's worth far more than rubies. And actually, there's only one other thing in Scripture that's described as being worth far more than rubies. I expect you know what it is. There's only one other thing. If we go back to the beginning of the book of Proverbs, in the first nine chapters there, it gives us a brilliant description of what wisdom is. And among lots of other things that it tells us, chapter 8, verse 11, says that wisdom is far more precious than rubies, and nothing you desire can compare with her. And so the perfect wife is worth far more than rubies, just the same as wisdom. So I think it's interesting. Solomon starts the book of Proverbs with a description of wisdom as being worth far more than rubies, and it finishes with the wife of noble character, who's also worth far more than rubies. Whether it therefore follows that the perfect wife is full of wisdom isn't said, but I think there could be some truth in that, because as we've already seen, the perfect wife fears the Lord, and we're actually told in Proverbs 1 verse 7 that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So why is this poem about the perfect wife placed at the very end of Proverbs? And I think we can come up with a number of answers to that question. But one may be that it actually leaves the reader on a very positive note, because many of the Proverbs themselves actually talk about foolish women, about immoral women, wayward wives with smooth tongues and so on. So it makes a good conclusion to the book by being positive and not having lots of negative things about women, and with a beautiful poem that extols the virtues of a perfect woman. So we'll look at the details of the passage now. In verse 10, it says, "A wife of noble character, who can find? She's worth far more than rubies." So first of all, it's implied that she's very hard to find. She's very rare, so it's not a very encouraging start for a woman who wants to come up to that standard, or for a man who's looking for a woman like that. It goes on in verse 11 and 12. "Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life." I think those two verses include the most important point in the whole passage. The husband and wife have perfect trust and confidence in each other. And why is that? Well, the husband says lacks nothing of value, so he has full confidence in his wife. And why is his wife so valuable to him? It's because she brings him good and not harm all the days of her life. And so there's a circle there. The wife's perfect support of her husband means that he has perfect confidence in her. And so as a result, she's as valuable as rubies to him. And knowing that's true, she continues to bring him good all the days of her life. And so there's a never-ending happy circle. Well, at least that's what the perfect relationship should be like. Obviously, it's an ideal. No one lives up to it. But that's what's given in the scriptures as the ideal. And that's why it starts off by saying, "Who can find such a woman?" Implying no one. Verses 13, 14, and 15. "She selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She's like the merchant ships, bringing her food from afar. She gets up while it's still dark. She provides food for her family and portions for her servant girls." Obviously, the bits about the wool and flax and providing for the servants aren't very relevant for us. But the gist of the three verses, I think, is relevant. It tells us that she works eagerly. She's determined to help provide for her family, and she does whatever is necessary to do that, even getting up while it's still dark. And I have to say that's something that I was never very good at doing when I was younger, and I'm a lot better at doing it now I'm older, simply because I don't sleep very well. So it's not because I've become a more perfect wife. It's just the ageing process. So I'm not much more perfect, but there we are. Still have to work on that one. Verses 16, 17, and 18. "She considers a field and buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees that her trading is profitable, and her lamp doesn't go out at night." So the next three verses carry on the theme of hard work. Not only is she eager to work, she manages her earnings well and she doesn't waste them. She doesn't go out on shopping sprees, which is a good word for me. But instead, she invests her earnings for the future. And in this passage, it's a vineyard. So she invests in a vineyard, and for us, it might be a savings account. In other words, she doesn't waste her money on buying lots of unnecessary items. Instead, she's prudent and she's careful, and she makes sure her trading is profitable. In other words, she makes sure that her expenditure is lower than her income. And I think that's very, very relevant to our modern society, where a lot of people actually spend a lot more than they earn. They borrow money on credit, and they rely on what they might earn in the future to actually pay it back. And as we're all now discovering, that's easier said than done, and that's part of the reason we're in the mess we are today. Far better to make sure that everything's paid for out of what we've already earned, so that, as it says, our trading is profitable. Also, not only does this perfect wife get up while it's still dark, it tells us that her lamp doesn't go out at night. So she works hard the whole time she's awake, it says. She's not idle. Basically, she doesn't laze around doing nothing. She keeps busy doing useful things for her husband, for her family, and for others. And again, I think we can see why it implies right at the start that this woman is a very rare person. Verses 19 and 20. In her hand, she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. Well, obviously the work with the distaff and the spindle is no longer relevant, but the result of all that hard work is relevant. It enables her not only to provide for her family, but it also means that she has some left over to help the poor in society. If we spend everything that we have on ourselves, and then we're no longer able to help other people, it's a good reason for not doing that and for saving. So this perfect wife makes sure that she manages her finances sensibly and well so that she can afford to give her money away to others. Again, it's a very good example for us. Unless we are in a position, and some people are, obviously, where they're reliant upon others for their care, people obviously, some are mentally or physically handicapped and they're not able to work, their situation means that they can't work, and many people don't work for many different reasons. But if we're not in that situation, then we should live within our means in such a way that it enables us to be generous to others that are less fortunate than ourselves. And then verses 21 and 22. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She's clothed in fine linen and purple. Well, those two verses emphasize the importance of having enough money to keep warm, both with suitable clothing and with necessary heating. And again, the implication is that it's important for the woman to manage the household finances well enough and for her to work long enough and hard enough to make sure that she can do that. However, it also mentions scarlet clothing for her family and fine linen and purple for herself. And back then, that could have only been afforded by someone who was rich and affluent. And so the wife in this poem not only has enough money, she actually has more than enough here. And she can actually provide luxuries for her family as well. And it doesn't say anything against that. It doesn't say there's anything wrong about that. And again, in Britain, where people are very well off, same in America, it doesn't say there's anything wrong with that. But it should be kept in the context of everything else that she's doing in this passage, and then it's all right. However, the word for scarlet here actually does, or can also mean double. So an alternative translation for verse 21 could read, when it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in double garments or with a double thickness, which actually I think makes better sense in the context of the cold weather. But whether it does say that or not, I don't know. Verse 23. Her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes his seat among the elders of the land. Well, there's a saying, behind every successful man, there's a wise woman. Here, the husband is respected in the city among the elders, and in this example, the husband obviously has a position of rank and authority, and it would be much harder for that man to achieve and maintain public respect if in the background he has a foolish and imprudent wife. And in Britain, we only have to think of Prince Andrew and his wife, Sarah Ferguson, to realise the truth of that, unfortunately. It's much easier for a man in the public eye if his wife acts with decorum and wisdom and restraint. It doesn't tell us she needs to be highly intelligent or that she needs to be excessively attractive, but it is necessary for her behaviour to be above reproach. And then verses 24 and 25. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies the merchants with sashes. She's clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. So those verses repeat what's gone before, only expressed in different words. She works hard, she conducts herself with dignity, and she's careful with her money so that she can laugh at the days to come, basically because she's financially prepared for them, as it said earlier. And then verses 26 and 27. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household, and she doesn't eat the bread of idleness. And so in these verses, for the first time, her wisdom is mentioned. And when she speaks, it's with wisdom. She doesn't indulge in idle gossip, and she doesn't indulge in malicious talking or slander. And she's not a busybody or a gossip, as described in 1 Timothy 5, verse 13. She doesn't go about from house to house spreading slander about other people. And she doesn't talk about other people behind their backs. Instead, it says, faithful instruction is on her tongue. In other words, when she speaks, it's worth listening to, it's positive, it's encouraging and uplifting. She doesn't speak about her husband behind his back. She's positive and encouraging and uplifting. And no wonder it's followed by the next two verses, 28 and 29, where it says, her children arise and call her blessed, and her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. So as a result of the way she lives and the way she conducts herself and the way she speaks with wisdom, she ends up with her children and her husband blessing her and her husband singing her praises, because he knows he can totally trust her and the way she conducts herself with him and when he's not there. Such a woman surpasses all other women. And her husband recognizes this and he praises her for it, and her children bless her. And then the passage finishes up by saying, charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the reward she's earned, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. So right at the end, for the first time in this passage, charm and beauty are mentioned. Well, charm is described as being deceptive, and beauty is described as short-lived. Because it's very true that many women can be very charming for a while in order to get exactly what they want, especially from men. And many beautiful women use their beauty to get their own way, again, especially with men. Unfortunately, they seldom ever use those for a good purpose. And so neither charm nor beauty are ever praised in Scripture. Instead, it's the woman who fears the Lord who's to be praised. And that underpins all the other positive things that are said about this perfect wife, which is why it says that a man should look for such a wife, and a wife should try and be such a wife. And then it says, although she doesn't look for a reward, the result is that people want to reward her, and so she receives her praise. Not only from her husband and children, but also from others, as it says at the city gate. So she's seen to be a good person, not only by her family, but also by all the others around her. So it's an absolute ideal. Who can possibly live up to that? Well, obviously, none of us can. But maybe that's why the Jewish women repeated it every Sabbath, just to bring it to their minds how they should be conducting themselves, what they should be doing. And that would obviously help a marriage along its way if they always behaved like that. And then hopefully would respond to that. And the relationship would be the best it could be. As I said, that passage was written 3,000 years ago, and yet I think that apart from the work that's described in that passage, that it's still very relevant for us today, and just as relevant as when it was first written. And to illustrate that point, I'd just like to finish this by reading you a piece that I found that was written by a modern woman only just a few years ago on what her view is of what the perfect wife today should be like. And it's not clear to me whether she's a Christian, but I was struck by some of the things she said in this, just how similar it is to what's said in Proverbs 31. So I'll finish with this. The perfect wife knows how to provide the harmonic balance within the family unit. She knows how to balance career, domestic chores, taking care of the children, and supporting her husband emotionally. The perfect wife knows how to smile at those jokes that aren't really that funny. She manages a small laugh and doesn't remind her husband that he's told that joke before repeatedly. Without her husband knowing it, the perfect wife embraces those age-old jokes over and over again as if they were brand new. The perfect wife will know that one day her husband might be in a nursing home and not even able to recognise who she is. And it'll be that day the old jokes will be a memory that keeps her going daily to visit her husband. The perfect wife finds the energy to pick up the piles of clothes and socks strewn about and the glasses that never actually make it back to the sink. Instead of clearing up after everyone and feeling like a maid, the perfect wife is proud of her home. She cleans it up without a second thought as to who did it last time or why everyone around her can't seem to walk to the kitchen sink. She knows that one day the house will be childless and there won't be any laughter as everyone is gathered around the TV and watching a movie and forgetting their dishes. The perfect wife cherishes the memories that are being made in the household from an active family life. The perfect wife wakes in the middle of the night to toss the covers back onto her husband because she wants him to stay warm. She doesn't sit up and wonder why she had to marry someone that thrashes about and snores so loudly. The perfect wife cherishes the quiet moments when she can watch her husband sleeping peacefully. Deep down, she knows that one day her bed may be empty because she's become a widow. The perfect wife doesn't look at just today. The perfect wife does not keep score as to who contributed the most or contributed what to a relationship. She values her marriage and she embraces her friendship with her husband. And when she's faced with multitasking and keeping the family in balance, the perfect wife focuses on enjoying each moment, for she is wise and she knows that the precious moments of today are not forever. It's from the perfect wife that many of us can learn to cherish today and let the problems that we may have had yesterday stay in the past.